from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joe Block has stepped his game up this year. The incredulity on that call, it is the inverse or the opposite of the Paul Skeens, what a man, what a mighty, mighty good man call from Chicago.
Does a good broadcaster generally try to reflect, I think, the feelings of the populace at large that's watching?
Yes. He's doing that.
I think Joe Block saying the phrase, what is O'Neal Cruz doing, is probably the literal statement people were making in their living rooms. I will admit this. So Alex had her friend, her best friend Lauren over. They love the Olympics last night. They're watching it on the TV. I did not get banished, Pony, to a smaller TV. I sat in there with them because it was Alex's birthday, and they were just hanging out, and I had the game on my phone because I can stream it in my house, all that stuff, right?
Man, what a move to concede the TV in that spot.
Well, just hanging out. And
what was her birthday?
Sorry. I audibly said when I watched that play, I said, what the F is O'Neal Cruz doing? Did not just say the letter, though. Loudly, loud enough for them to look at me like, what are you doing? We're watching God knows whatever it was. Just an unforgivably terrible, whatever we say, heads up play when a guy makes a smart play, heads down play. Just an inexcusable gaffe there, which followed a previous pretty inexcusable throwing error, all of which led to three runs that shouldn't have been on the board. Your boy Woodford Reserve went out there and made you look like a prophet. He really didn't give up a run. He pitched that well. Three unearned runs. O'Neal Cruz, who is supposed to be their best player when times are right, that's what people want to believe he is, was their worst player yesterday and cost them a win.
If they played Aliko Williams, they would have won that game.
In a wild card chase where suddenly none of the teams that they are chasing can lose all of a sudden. Are you saying you're not suggesting they should have played Aliko Williams?
No, I'm not suggesting it, but I'm pointing out that if they had just a garden variety, if Ryan Bixler was at shortstop last night, they would have won that game.
He also might have hit better than O'Neal Cruz. Here's my theory on this. I'll just lay it out.
He had nine strikeouts in that series, Chris.
I think O'Neal Cruz, there are people who have said he turns it on when he wants. The implication is he doesn't care. I actually think it's the opposite. I think O'Neal Cruz desperately wants to be seen as a major reason that they are winning baseball games, wants to be part of it. He makes an early throwing error and then is striking out a human windmill in the entire series. And there's no shame in a lefty having trouble with Valdez. He's really good. But I think the guy pressed his way into trying to make a play that he had no business even being out there for. Block was 100% right to rip him as harshly as he did. It's inexcusable, and there's one small part of me that at least is glad that I'm this pissed off about it, because it means that game mattered a lot to them. If this game happens and they're 10 games under 500, we're all going, what's he doing? Come on. But we're in the thick of it right now. You can't do that. It's bad.
I want to give Block credit. I have to be fair, though, and say I love Greg Brown. I have no idea what they were talking about on TV with crowd noise last night. Get the hell out of here with that. The guy's running into not shallow left field. He almost ran into either he would have either hit the stands and flipped into it like Jeter, or would have slammed into the Crawford boxes in left field.
He ran at least, 85, 90 feet for that ball?
Crowd noise, I got it. No, know where you are on the field.
Not only
you're not where you should be, you're in no man's land there. I'm not blaming voracious Astros
the crowd
that
were
so
screaming.
Loud
yes,
on that play.
It was the last play of the World Series.
I'm not giving him that the ball out for that play.
And the ball wasn't like dropping in no man's land where you have two guys, one infielder, one outfielder, who are in a dead run.
No, Reynolds was camped under it.
Yes, it was a routine play for Brian Reynolds. And I think a guy in O'Neill Cruz who really wanted to be seen as, look, I'm doing something positive, made one of the ultimate negative plays. And you know what? I hate doing this. I think the guy, when he's on, is terrific. This is going to be a loss last night. They took 2 of 3. Great. Meatloaf's theory that 2 out of 3 ain't bad, disproven in this case, because I feel like that was a huge opportunity missed. If they miss the playoffs,
you mean like when
game,
Skeens game on Monday against the Cardinals, and I said the same thing, and you said you can never say that. When
yeah,
you take two of three.
I disagree with myself from Monday. I'm time traveling to go back, and because I'm that pissed off about this one. This is going to be the game, just like you said of the Skeens game. This is going to be the kind of game where if they miss the playoffs by a game or two, we turn back and cite this game. How on earth did they lose when a guy named Jake Woodford, nobody even knew was on the Pirates or in their organization, pitched 5 of the best innings of his life and got nothing for it? Everything, like I heard people.
All right,
I was on
so
the
Chris
Ball
blaming O'Neill Cruz
yes,
for missing the playoffs.
I heard people. No, I'm not going right.
Well,
into
if they
that.
Lost the game,
it's going to be a game we cite.
Why.
It's going to be a game that we cite. There's going to be a million reasons they could have, but that's going to be
but
a big one.
This is going to be the biggest
it's gonna
one.
It's
going to
be one
that's his fault.
It's going to be one that's. It is his fault that they lost the game. We can all say that. I heard people on the sports call last night trying to say, you know, well, you bring in Holderman, and that's it. No. Holderman made sense there. As much as I said, Derek Shelton pushed the wrong button. He didn't. He actually made the right move. They made one bad pitch call. They shouldn't have thrown a first pitch fastball, and the guy made a great swing on it. But they're not in that situation. For all I know, Woodford might have been allowed to keep going out there because he was throwing zeros at him of his own volition. If O'Neill Cruz doesn't screw up horribly, I could, not that I could tolerate it. If it was one of their down-the-line guys, it's easy to say he just sucks. He's not part of their future plans. It really pisses me off, but whatever. This guy is supposed to be the cornerstone for the next 4 or 5 years of their position group.
Okay, I agree with what Neil Walker said after the game. Did you hear it?
I heard Dan ask him a very specific question about like the cultural differences of this and if he's just in his own head right now. And it was a very carefully worded question. I did not hear anything that that preceded that, though.
Here is Neil last night on Cruz's awful game. 3 errors, 5 errors in the series, and now the most errors in Major League Baseball.
I think there's a maturity process that goes along with the ups and downs, especially disassociating your offensive side of things and your defensive side of things. We've seen him be extremely streaky. I just think there's some growing that's going on with him and still kind of settling in. Does he continue to play shortstop at the major league level? I hope so. I think he's dynamic enough to do it. But the attention to detail and the focus throughout an entire game, it has to ramp up.
I think that's the question that should be asked right now. If this guy is going to flourish and turn into the player that we think he can be, which is honestly one of the best players in baseball, can he continue to play shortstop, especially if Neil thinks the mishaps in the field carry over to the plate? He makes bad plays in the field. Now he wants to go swing for the fences and swing at everything when he's at bat again to make up for 3 errors, and that's how you get 9 strikeouts in this series. The hitting is really good. His 162 game average is 30 homers and almost 100 RBIs. You sign up for that when you are an offensive starved team like the Pirates. Chris, he's arguably the worst defensive player in baseball. If you go by the metrics, he's the most errors in baseball. If you go by the traditional one, defensive run safe stat -8. That's the worst by a shortstop in the league. He's 6'7". Shortstops don't look like that. So my thing is, you ride it out with him. I don't think there's a solution on August 1st with 2 months to go in the season. But
Where do you want him ideally playing?
I think you got to move him.
But what position? Is he a first baseman?
Well, let me finish my point for a second. This is a team that stresses defense by playing guys like Yasmani Grandal at catcher, and then he's red hot lately, but Michael A. Taylor in center field. They signed Austin Hedges, who hit 150, because they believe in up the middle defense. They didn't want to move him to the outfield because previously he didn't want to move. Okay, so you acquiesced to the wishes of a high-end player. But when the results defensively are this bad and the incredible plays, like he made a great play to his right in falling away through a seed to first base and threw a guy out last night. But those don't make up for the gaffes. So, yes, I'm moving him this offseason. I'm trying something else with O'Neal Cruz. Because shortstop is the most important defensive position in the field, and he's not good at it.
So is he
objectively not good at it? Probably, yeah.
Where's Brian De La
Cruz? Because of the arm, left.
But he's not good on defense, and left field at PNC Park's a premium defensive
DH.
Spot. Where's Andrew McCutchen if he wants to come back? We're going to play that game
he's
again?
He's on another team next year. Probably.
I mean,
or he's out of baseball, Chris.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's 20 errors!
It's really bad.
Do you see it getting better? There's nobody else in the history of baseball. The Pirates have been around since 1887.
I ripped his throws 2 games ago.
There's no one who looks like him. Yes. How about the play at the end of the game on Tuesday night is an example of that, where he held onto it forever.
No, I
just don't think it's going to click there because guys like him do not play the position and never have.
I think the one reason we heard they thought he could stick was his feet are unusually small for how tall he is, and therefore he would be nimble enough, but I see bad routes to balls. I just see that's a nuanced position, too, of like there's like a lot of devil in the details things, how you approach a ball, footwork. I don't think he's a confident thrower of the baseball. I realize now he does that double clutch thing and then throws laser beams that sometimes end up in the dirt because I don't think he's comfortable just like stepping into a throw normally. There's a timing thing, and I'm in no mood to defend him. I think the guy's bat can carry them for like a month at a time sometimes when it's going right. And I love watching him hit, and I love watching him do some of the stuff that physically he and very few others are capable of doing, but he cost them a game. It's brutal to behold, and I have no real defense for anyone, you know, if anyone wants to say move
him. Do you agree with the treating him with kid gloves last night by Shelton? Just nothing?
Not really.
Nothing last night that appeared that he was angry or frustrated with the mishaps, and then after the game trying to make excuses for him about how the game goes too fast, and let's not forget he hurt himself early last year.
No, the hurt himself stuff has now been used to excuse his hitting, which I actually have more of an understanding of, that maybe you'd be not up to speed on major league pitching, but I don't use it for fielding. I mean, there's not that many, you're not facing pitches, you're fielding the baseball. I have no problem with like Rowdy Tellez. Apparently, the camera's catching him, like trying to.
I love that last night because that was
good.
Not
that's,
him.
That's a real teammate,
and that was not him doing it for show. Like with
no,
Bednar,
that was legit.
In the dugout after the game.
Like I think these guys
having a heart to heart with him.
Reynolds,
I love that from Big Rowdy
Reynolds, who's probably livid about the play, and he should be. I think they all know how important he is. I don't think that there's a lack of give a crap on O'Neal Cruz's part at all. I think he gives a crap too much, and like Walker said, it can go either way. When he doesn't hit, he doesn't field. When he doesn't field, he presses at the plate. But at some point, he's what, 25, Pony?
Yep.
He's not a 19-year-old kid they called up who's like a wonderkind, right?
Yeah, he's not Juan Soto or Bryce Harper
Derek
anymore.
Shelton has, I think, kept this team not only together, but I think they generally like playing for him because he's a pretty good vibes guy. At some point, you have to tell the player, this isn't good enough.
All right, let's run the gamut with you, Donnie. Should they have pulled him out of the game last night, yes or no?
Yeah, I think they should have. I think after the play with Reynolds, I would have probably had him sit like right after that inning.
Would you sit him down for Friday's game?
If they didn't have a day, if they had a game today, I would have absolutely sat him. I don't know if they maybe think, well, we have a day off, he can get away from it a little bit, and we can put him back in there. I still think it should be considered. And, you know, people can say whatever they want. Oh, you can't take that bat out of the lineup. But, I mean, the fact is that game, you rarely see, especially in baseball, that a singular individual actually loses the game for you. That
who's
happened
not the starter,
last
who's
night.
Not the pitcher, basically.
Right.
Yeah,
that happened
right.
Last night. The Pirates easily win that game. It's, what, 4-2. You know, let's just say Holderman still gives up a home run. Okay, big whoop. They win the game 4-2. Because your guy Woodford, to your credit, Pony, And I had a feeling on Woodford Reserve. That guy pitched his ass off.
Do you have concerns about Cruz fulfilling his potential long term, big picture?
I would say a little bit. I think that's partially just on us seeing what a unicorn he is. And like every single year now, it's like, well, he's going to be a 40-40 player or a 30-30 player. I think it's going to be tough for us at the end of time with him that we're not saying, ah, he was a bit overrated. But, I mean, I still think he can be a really...
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Really good pull.
It's a major league player that's got to get through it because of the fact I think he can change the game, especially in this ballpark. I mean, you can flick a ball, mishit a ball to left field with his power and it goes out. And defensively, he had a couple tough innings and then he came back and actually made a couple tough plays on the backhands later in the game. It looked like he was trying to go a little bit too fast. And, you know, sometimes that happens with young players, and he was trying to create a little bit too much. And, you know, I was proud of him because later in the game he had a couple tough backhand plays that he stayed with. He just had a couple, you know, tough innings.
Yeah, that's Derek Shelton saying you take the good because it outweighs the bad with O'Neal Cruz. And, hey, I think lately Shelton's done a pretty good job as Pirates skipper to get them to this point. But, I mean, are we allergic in 2024 to just come out and say a guy had a massive brain fart and I talked to him, and I told him that just can't happen. What are you doing out there? Calm the F down. Chill out. It's like Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes baseball, where there's one guy trying to play every position.
Like on that,
stay in
on
your
that,
lane, dude.
On that level, I could not that I like the throwing error, the first one. I can like live with it because it's just a physical error. He just didn't make a good throw. The second play is just all mental. It's all freaking out. And I would hope Derek Shelton behind closed doors would say something different. Got a guy saying, having the bat at short, an advantage over almost every team. The glove has improved each year. Stop. Stop right there. It has not improved. It is getting worse. He had 17 errors his first kind of full tour of duty, semi-full tour of duty. He's got 20 this year.
But
show me where... You can't make an objective case
no
that
doubt.
The glove is improving.
And look,
you I do
listen to the idea that you don't always grade guys on errors because you get more chances at shortstop. And if a guy gets to more balls than a shortstop who lets a ground ball go through for a base hit and makes an error off of it because technically he gets a glove on it or something or tries to throw to first then it's off the mark, you live with that. You know, we have more advanced things now to measure defensive play, zone rating, defensive run saved. All the numbers come back and say the same thing. The guy sucks at playing shortstop. And I'm not angry at him for it because he is one of one. In the entire history of baseball, no one that big has ever been asked to play that position consistently. So at the end of this year, I just would say to myself, if I'm the Pirates, why are we demanding out of a really good player him to do something? We're asking him to do something that no one else has ever done before.
He wants to do it, though.
Well, that's where the hard conversations come in, Chris.
If they were demanding he play it because they felt it was so important that he stick at shortstop, that would be organizational malpractice. I can't give him grace here. He wants to be doing this.
But there's a dollars and cents way of selling this to him. Hey, O'Neal, if you want to make the amount of money you want to make, the fact that defensively you're so poor at shortstop, it's going to hurt you. Because teams, whether it's us or someone else, yes, that's what Neil Walker is saying, that the two things are connected. He said disassociate the two things.
If somebody really wanted to make the financial argument to him, they would just say this: play a different position. I don't care who you are, people are never going to pay you for the glove they'll pay you for the bat.
Chris, I think it drags down his worry so bad defensively. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think there's a chance Michael A. Taylor and or Key Brian Hayes might have a higher WAR than Cruz this year, because they're very good defensively.
Neither of them does.
No?
He's a 1.7 WAR player. But
what are they?
Michael A. Taylor, 1.3. Who was the other one?
Hayes.
Hayes is less than a win because you want to talk about a bat dragging glove.
But I'm saying, would you think that Cruz and Taylor are that close to each other?
No, they shouldn't be.
No, of course not.
No. But they are. I mean, he's worth almost a full win less than Luis Ortiz.
Let's hear what our listeners think, starting with Keith and Plum. Hello, Keith. God bless you.
Thank you. Good timing. How are you doing? I don't know whether his career is a shortstop or not, but I do know the answer to the question you said about one person single-handedly costing the Pirates a game.
Yep.
It was July of 2011, and his name was Jerry Meals.
Okay, what does that have to do with what we're talking about right now, Keith?
Well, you said that you don't know the last time when it lived. Oh. He single-handedly cost him that game.
Okay, he didn't play in the game, though. He was an umpire. But thank you for a history lesson, and we hope you keep listening. Let's go to Joe in Pittsburgh next. Hello, Joe.
Yeah, so I think what's so infuriating about this, and I think your listeners who watch the Pirates all year know this, is this has been going on all summer long. These Olympic mad dashes deep into the outfield by Cruz. I saw it in April, and I saw it again the next week. And I turned to my brother and I said, either someone's going to get really hurt or he's going to really blow a game doing this. And I've seen it. Blows my mind all summer long.
I think one of the announcers might have said it during Tuesday's game, not last night, but the night before. Like, man, he's going way out there in left field, and he's almost colliding with Reynolds.
Since April. And sure enough, it came to roost. Thankfully, no one's gotten hurt yet. But my question is, I don't know if we're coddling these players, but you can't sit someone down and keep him from doing that. You learn that in Little League, that it's the outfielder's ball when he calls you off.
I know. The problem is
really that hard?
Joe, the problem is they're trying to win baseball games, and the bat is still too valuable, because even when he's scuffling as horribly as he was at the plate, he runs into one pitch, he changes again.
I don't disagree with you on that, Chris, but why can't they keep him at shortstop but make it more obvious to him that, hey,
stop chasing after balls like that. Well, I would hope that they can, but
where's the coaching?
They opened up a little bit of a can of worms, and I actually liked this because they took advantage of how big of an arm he has and how much he seemed to thrive doing it. They would send him all over the field to be the cutoff man.
Yeah, like he'd go over to the right side.
It probably got them a couple of outs that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise because he threw a couple of laser beams.
Right, but that's different.
I know it's different, but you have to drive that home. This is when we want you like basically taking the little family circus route across the field. Otherwise, it ain't your ball. It is very obvious he likes taking charge, but being good at that position, being great, is equally about knowing when it's not your play.
We'll take more of your calls on this, 412-928-9370. Here's the counselor. Hello, counselor.
Hi. I don't normally call you guys, but I'm listening. Listen, that isn't the first time that he's run off either Reynolds or another outfielder. He has got to be sat at least at that moment to emphasize the fact that you don't do this. Okay? And on top of it, he then threw throw that cost another run, you know, actually did get the run home. So, and he almost got Reynolds hit in the face with the ball, if you look at it. Reynolds had to, you know, turn away and duck out, so he didn't get hit.
So would you bench him for the game tomorrow night? It sounds like the counselor would, is what I'm sensing here.
I'll tell you the truth. I'm halfway, I'm like Donnie Football. I'm leaning towards that. Because somehow, if you're not making an impression or the infield coach can't seem to get it across his head that he can't run people off like that, it's an easier catch for the outfielder.
It's not even a 50-50 or 60-40
ball. Easier implies that one or the other could probably have an equal claim. The outfielder has the claim to the ball there 100 times out of 100. At what level of little... Here's what I said to Pomp. The only time I could ever imagine that being the shortstop's ball is if you're playing Little League where your shortstop is the best player and your outfielder has grass growing at his feet because he doesn't even want to be out there.
Yes.
Then it's the shortstop's ball. This is the major leagues. Brian Reynolds had it camped under. I am almost surprised at how pissed I am about this, but it's because I know it cost them a win and a sweep.
Did you see the tweet from Bucko Baseball on X? The guy, I think... What one tweet of the month on the very last day? The Key Brian Hayes account that's very popular that puts
Platinum
out videos.
Key Brian
sent out a video, put out the video with the caption: "No one is more upset with O'Neill Cruz than O'Neill Cruz." And Bucko Baseball responded, "I don't know. You should hear my grandpa right now." And that's true. Like, this should not be generational at all, but I feel like baseball is an older sport, and like people that are your dad's age, for example, have a zero tolerance policy on plays like that.
My dad was always
zero
a defense first guy.
Zero tolerance policy. You don't have it through your head where you don't know like where you're supposed to be, your assignment on a play. You can't drift off and try to make a play like that out of your ass.
Yes, of the big four sports in this country, by far baseball is considered the most cerebral one. Even though it's a physical sport, you got to have the talent. I think by far, and you would probably agree with this because I know you like this part of the game. You miss double switches, do you not?
Oh, the strategy of baseball.
Yeah,
you just
love your strategy. You love keeping that scorebook. It's all about having, my dad's first lesson was have your head in the game at all times, and that extends to plays like that.
Well, strike one anyway in the pitch. McCutchen bounces it up the middle, ticks off of Hader towards second, Altuve to first, and that's the ball game as the Pirates commit four errors. And they gift wrap some early runs for the Astros, who take advantage, and they scratch out one win in the series. Houston wins 5-4 tonight.
We got a good show. We're going to be joined by Pompeiani next hour. We're getting closer to his first preseason call. Steelers and Texans, 8 days out. They did not have the pads on today at practice. We will get a practice report from Ray Fittipaldo at 5:15. Jordy Mercer in the 4 o'clock hour. I can't wait to hear what he has to say about O'Neill Cruz and what went on with him in this series and his future at shortstop. I'd move him into a new position. Maybe he stinks in right field, but you can get away with a bad right fielder. Much harder to get away with a bad defensive shortstop, and he's got the most errors now in baseball. I get what you're saying too, Chris. Like, there's a sensitivity. You don't want to say that a player, because of his ethnicity, like he's a Latin ball player, you don't want to say... this is why he's struggling, and
well, Dan asked
because of stereotypical stuff.
Dan asked it in a very, I think, thoughtful way, and Neil tried to answer thoughtfully, and he answered with his own experience in the Venezuelan Winter League. It was more Dan saying, like, the mental difficulty any player would go through when you know you're making errors that are hurting the team. Is it tougher when you don't maybe have as much of a support system, or you don't speak the language as your native one? And Neil had a good response, but I don't think any of that factors in here. Baseball's baseball. You know what I mean? Sprinting out 95 feet into short left field is, it doesn't matter where you're from.
And I also
should know not to do that.
And I also don't think the guy's Polanco. He's a much better player than Polanco. What they have in common sometimes are these games defensively where they make mistakes that your 10-year-old wouldn't make. And that drives fans nuts. But he as an offensive talent, as a hitter, does a much better job of making up for it.
That's my biggest worry, though, with him right now. Much bigger worry in the large picture. I'm going to look like an idiot for saying this like 3 weeks from now if it happens again. I don't think we're going to see as egregious a bad play as we saw last night, the pop-up. I don't think that'll happen again. It almost It would be like, it would defy belief for me. What I do think is possible is if after this day off to just reset the old counter here, he comes back and is still flailing at the ball, I think it could start to take a big toll on him. Because he was getting pretty locked in as a hitter. And starting
he had a great July.
And starting to carry them in many ways.
He had an OPS over 900 in
the
July.
The bat is what matters way more to me right now with him than the glove. The glove cannot
infect
the bat.
But you have to worry about the glove because the position
I'm saying I worry about the glove as a function of how it affects the bat. If he continues to scuffle in the field, is it going to have him pressing more at the plate? Because he becomes an easy out when he's swinging at stuff low and away.
Here's Jake on the fan. Hello, Jake.
Hey, guys. Love the show.
Thank you.
So, yeah, this is exciting times with Pirates baseball, but when you see him swinging at anything, you just want to throw your remote at your TV. These nine strikeouts, you just can't have them. And I would say, you know, you have to try to move him to a different position, maybe try him left field. Maybe he can rob some home runs with his 6'7" height. And then if his arm, maybe throw him like bot at home. But, you know, shortstop's too crucial. I think you try to move him at a different position.
I don't think you can move him midseason, though.
I think that's obvious.
That's you can't do it. Unless, like, the only way this would rectify itself, sort of, I guess, is, and you don't want this because it involves an injury, like McCutcheon's hurt for a couple of weeks, you DH him, and you put somebody else at short because you could.
Chris, one of the things about Kiner Falefa now and his versatility is that next year, with Gonzalez back healthy, Gonzalez goes to second, Kiner Falefa goes to short, and it gives you an opportunity to move him to the outfield, I think.
No, I know. I'm saying this year, the only way you could do it is if McCutcheon like tweaked a hammy,
yeah,
and then you make him your DH because De La Cruz is your right fielder, and then you have IKF be your shortstop. Yeah.
Here's Rich next. Hello, Rich.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
What's up, Rich?
You got two guys that would be great third basemen. Why can't you use Leonard Epp with shortstop and move Cruz to right field or left field?
I mean, hey, the way Hayes is not hitting this year, he would fit the mold of the classic all-glove, no-hit shortstop. Put Triolo at third base, you're saying, basically?
Oh, my God. Triolo can't play every day for a major league team. Rich, the guy stinks.
Shortstop off and on?
Triolo?
No, he's a third baseman and a second baseman.
Well, he plays short in a pinch, and he doesn't play it badly, but the guy can't hit. Now, he had a pretty good series in Houston, but I think that's obviously the exception to the rule.
He had a good series because they traded for a guy that he realized was going to cut into his playing time significantly, and all of a sudden, here comes Jared Triolo.
Here is one of Dan Zangrilli's favorites on the postgame show. I recognize this name, John in Alabama. Hello, John.
How we doing, guys?
Hey, man.
Hello, John.
Hey, this is not an isolated incident. You know, two times earlier in the week, he almost cost the team, maybe the game in the ninth inning. You know, patting his glove with a rifle and missiles across the ground. Les jumped his butt the one night. Connor Joe saved him the other night in the ninth inning. You go back to that game against Philly, if you guys remember, he tried to take first, second on a fly ball. The outfield almost cost us a run.
Yep.
I think this guy screams center field. You know, with Kiner coming in, move him to short.
Wait, you're saying he screams center field? That's a premium position, too.
I think you get better out there, but then I don't think you weaken yourself in right field with Reynolds, Nicole Glover out there in two positions. Like, I think you give him the opportunity to try and learn it.
I wouldn't start him in center field. Like, I'd start him in a corner outfield, and if he takes to it, then I would think about eventually moving him to center.
Also, I'm not even going to bother. I was
catcher.
I was going to quibble on a very small matter. I had no issue with him.
Have him pitch. I mean,
no. I had
6'7".
No,
he throws it hard.
He cited the base running thing. I had no issue with him trying to take second there because the run had already scored and he would have been in scoring position with two outs. But that doesn't matter.
Junior's next. Hello, June.
Hey, brothers. What's going on?
Hey, man.
Hey, O'Neill Cruz. Brother just needs to slow it down. Take a breath. He's flashy, physical specimen. Everyone loves that. But, I mean, all that fancy stuff ends up turning him inconsistent, leads to all this erratic stuff, terrible
decision
making.
I think he's got a little bit of a yip situation with easy throws, Junior. I would say when it comes to the easy throws where he doesn't have to rush them, I think he doesn't have the makings of a varsity athlete.
If you got to think about it, he's not gonna make the play.
That's
you get him out there and he's going off of what his instincts are. You're going to have a hell of a ball player. Sorry if I'm swearing and getting kicked off.
The play there where he made it going to his right and then had to get rid of the ball immediately because was it Altuve running? I think it was. there's no time to think, and his instincts did take over, and he made a very good throw. But when he has time for like a pretty routine play, he pats that glove pony, and I think it's because he doesn't feel comfortable just getting rid of the ball quickly.
Here's lifelong Pirates fan who's had a catbird seat on this series, Daryl in Houston, back with us on the Fan. Hello, Daryl.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Good show. You touched on a couple of things that I was going to touch on, and one of the things was the cerebral part of the game. I was at the game last night, and you got to understand, if in Minute Maid, the left field is very short. So even if Reynolds is at the warning track, he can cover that ground.
Right, and that's something that they go over before the series even starts with players, Daryl.
Exactly. They go over that, and they go over the notch that's in left center.
They basically tell him that. Daryl, they probably tell him, hey, O'Neill, it's the complete opposite of left field at PNC Park, where you might have to range out there for that ball.
Exactly. And here's some hidden things that people aren't talking about that's going to hurt going down. And you guys touched on them. First of all, we got a guy coming up from Indianapolis against their best pitcher in their park. And we got new guys to the lineup. That game is winnable. That's a winnable game. That's not like saying, well, I heard Paul mention, well, that baseball kind of evens itself out. Yeah, it does when the other team makes plays to beat you. It doesn't even itself out when you make plays to beat yourself.
They beat themselves. Exactly. So, they beat themselves last night. More specifically, O'Neill Cruz beat the Pirates.
And lastly, I said it. I had to walk out after he made the play because I knew the next guy was getting a hit, and there was tears around where I was sitting. And what I had to say, I had to go in the bathroom to say it because it pissed me off that badly. And the last thing I'll say, I said we should have benched him right then and there. I'd have pulled him right then and there. I wouldn't have pulled him out during that inning, but he wouldn't have saw any more playing time after that because he was completely done.
I agree, Daryl. I would not have embarrassed him like Billy Martin with Reggie Jackson, who ironically was at the game teaching Paul Skeen.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster: wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.